Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. A Republican congressperson throws his hat into the ring for governor while another GOP candidate drops out. Plus, Wisconsin abortion providers suspend their work amid Medicaid funding cuts. And assembly lawmakers roll out competing election proposals together. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 26th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., what a long week it's been, and I am really only referring to the last 2 hours, I think. We're starting once again with some breaking news, our second time in just a couple of weeks, that Bill Berrien has dropped out of the race for governor. This was a GOP candidate. Earlier this week, some Oppo research was published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, finding that he had followed certain people, including sex workers and transgender people, on social media, sort of in opposition to some of his stated, you know, policy positions. And he dropped out just a few moments ago with a statement that says, in part, that as his campaign was going forward, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published two articles clearly targeted to force me out of the race. And as a result of our politics today, I cannot focus on the issues I know will turn Wisconsin around. I have come to the conclusion that I do not have a path to the nomination. So a very eventful kind of 24 hours since these articles came out. What do you make of all of this?
Look, there's a way to survive bad media if you want to fight it. And there wasn't a good path for Berrien anyway. I'll talk about more later in the show, but the bottom line is that there's been like this clock ticking in his campaign since he announced. I got a rough rollout, bad reception from sort of talk radio. This is like nail in the coffin if you're not going to find a way to fight it because you have a path to the nomination.
Yeah, and you know, he was, as you say, he was kind of a never Trump guy who then was trying to align himself with Trump, and he was a business person without a political background, and so there was a lot that was kind of unique and unusual about his candidacy anyways, and then, as you say, these kind of fireworks in the final moments. At the same time that a different Republican was getting into the race, and so a huge just shakeup across the board of the Republican side of the governor's race, Tom Tiffany made his announcement that he will be running. This is kind of, there were some tea leaves about this for a long time, and that was one of the really big questions on the Republican side, was that was whether and when he might do that. So he did that this week. He has served in the Congress since 2020. Before that, he was a state legislator. What do you make of his appearance on the Republican side of things?
Instant front runner. Even when Berrien's still in the race, look, Tiffany has got a lot of things going for him. One, he's been in office for 15 years from the state legislature and Congress. His MAGA credentials are unquestioned. He's in touch with the grassroots. And he's very polished. I interviewed him like many others did this week. He in Congress backed a bill in the 21-22 session that would have banned abortion at 6 weeks, basically a fetal heartbeat bill. After heartbeat's detected, no more abortions, no exception to rape or incest. He was asked about that by multiple times, including myself, and he kept going, I support the 20-week law I voted for in the legislature. So he's in the state Senate. Back in 2015, Republicans passed a law to move the ban to 20 weeks in Wisconsin. He kept saying, I support that ban. I asked him, well, okay, if you're governor and Republicans control both houses in 2027 and send you a ban at 14 weeks, which is where Robin Voss wants it to be, the Assembly Speaker, would you sign it? I support the ban at 20 weeks. He's very polished. It shows you won't get shaken on the campaign trail when things come up, but he's got some issues. One, abortion. We don't know for sure how much of an issue abortion is going to be in 2026. It was huge in 23 in the campaign for Supreme Court, well, 2022 for governor. So 22 for governor, 23 Supreme Court, 24 kind of got pushed down behind immigration and crime. 25, it was part of the Supreme Court race as well. Where's it going to be in 2026? Well, we talk about later in the show about Planned Parenthood and halting abortion procedures for a while. This could be an issue for him. Republicans have bled support in the suburbs of Milwaukee from Republican-leaning women, especially back in the day. Now they're Democrats over abortion. This is not going to help him. Other thing for Tiffany is, how's he raise the money? He's not been a great fundraiser in his time in Congress. He told me his goal was like $30, $40 million for this campaign. Okay. Can you raise it? And do you have big donors behind you? He's doing a fundraiser in October. I saw the invite. Liz Uline is on there. Liz Uline has given $14.8 million to Republican candidates and groups since 2010, according to her state database. She is one of his mega donors. So he's got one locked up. Can he get others, and will they back him financially? Because that's what his big challenge is. Where's the money going to be? How's he appeal to those former Republican suburban voters? And, you know, what's the environment going to be like next year with Trump in the White House?
You know, and it's interesting you talk about how he was sort of an instant front runner. One of the signs of that is the instant attacks that were levied against him by the Democratic Party. They clearly kind of, you know, had these things locked up and ready to go, partly on his track record on abortion, and then partly, too, on his support for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and the tariffs. And so they are really trying to, much like Republican candidates want to align themselves with Trump, Democratic candidates mm-hmm. want to align their opponents with Trump. And so you're seeing that the opposition to him is much stronger than to Bill Berrien, you know, before he dropped out, and to Josh Shulman. And so we'll continue to see also kind of the domino effects of him joining the race, what that means kind of elsewhere in the election.
And if you're watching the Packer game on Sunday, you'll see a Tom Tiffany Loves Tariffs ad for the state Democratic Party. Not a very big buy, but it's going to be run during the Packer game, which shows you, again, to your point, which is excellent, that they see him as the eventual nominee. They're going after him right away, trying to find him early before he finds himself.
Yeah, and so one of the things that was also announced this week is that the Democratic Party and Governor Evers are forming the Wisconsin Governor Readiness Project. And so the idea there is essentially, okay, so we have all of these candidates on the Democratic side of things. There might be some infighting. There might be a little bit of weakening that always happens during the primary. How do we make sure that nobody gets to August and then is not able to kind of hit the finish line in November? And so they're going to try to put all kinds of resources behind the eventual nominee. So that's kind of an interesting component to just the resources that are going into this. Evers came out again and said he's most likely not going to, I think he said never say never, but he's probably not going to endorse anyone. And then we did have one other Democratic candidate get in the race, Brett Hulsey, who is a little bit before my time, but he's a former state lawmaker from Madison. I believe he ran for governor in 2014
yes.
unsuccessfully. And so that'll be sort of an interesting, again, kind of twist in the Democratic side of things. And then along with the kind of dominoes falling, with Tiffany saying that he'll run for governor, that would leave open his congressional seat. So we have the first candidate in that race. Jesse Eben has declared for the 7th Congressional District. And then two additional kind of smaller offices or less consequential, let's say. Eric Wilson for treasurer, trying to get the only Republican statewide race that's kind of competitive. And then former Lancaster Mayor David Varnum for the Republican lieutenant governor ticket.
So first, the Dem group trying to help the eventual nominee. The Democratic Governor Association, something similar in 2018, that group spent about $12 million in the campaign, Stronger Wisconsin, they called it. Basically, they knew that this crowded field in 2018 of 10 people that shrunk to 8 by the time the primary rolled around, the nominee's going to be broke after the primary. It provided air cover the day after the race is over for the eventual nominee, Tony Evers, to raise money, get on his feet financially, and then start running his own ads. This was something similar. You've got a growing field, more adding, it seems like, all the time. So this is a way to raise money. It's a vehicle for donors who may be holding back from a candidate. Say, okay, I can give money to the party, then help the cause come August 17th, the primary is the 16th, I think, next year. So that's that priest. Brett Hulsey, if you know his background, he is not a serious candidate for governor. It's an interesting story, kind of a sad fall from grace. He was actually an environmental advisor for Bill Clinton's campaign in 1992. This guy was a respected voice on environmental issues in Madison for a long time, won a seat in the state assembly in 2010, and then Act 10 happened and things kind of started going south. In 2012, I think it was, he pled no contest, disorderly conduct for literally flipping a child he didn't know off of an inner tube at a Madison beach. He had an aide in 2013 say that she feared for her safety because he brought a box cutter to the Capitol and talking about bringing a long gun to the building as well. In 2014, he ran for governor. He dressed in Confederate regalia and went to the GOP convention in Milwaukee, was going to hand out Ku Klux Klan-style masks to highlight Republicans' racist policies, he said. Things just kind of went off the rails for Brett, and he's kind of become persona non grata. Yes, he ran for governor in 2014. People aren't really looking to pay attention to him, and are warning that this could be a candidate could pull that primary into an odd direction. So Democrats I talked to are wondering, can they basically ignore him? If you have a debate and Brett's invited, do you want to go because of what could happen if he's on the stage? With Jesse Eben, worth noting that he's not going to be the last person to get in this race. There's going to be probably a couple lawmaker or two, some of the private sector. There'll be interesting people. Gets a deep red seat. Worth noting, she ran for the 3rd Congressional District in 2020, lost to Derek Van Orden. A big issue in that race was she signed the recall petition in Scott Walker in 2012. Now, her parents were school teachers. She said at the time in 2020 that I did it because I was told that they'd be fired if that law passed. I've now become a Republican. This is back in 2020. It helped me realize what I was, but that is a scarlet P for petition, I guess, in Republican primaries, that you sign the petition, Scott Walker. That's tough to overcome in a primary.
Yeah, so again, so much just continuing to unfold. And I'm particularly curious about some of those kind of smaller statewide races that get much less attention. Again, trying to get your name in the hat for lieutenant governor or treasurer, it's always very fascinating. Another kind of piece of breaking news, again, on this Friday, is the report from the Gableman, the latest in the Gableman saga. So in April, let's back up. Former Justice Michael Gableman has been under investigation for years, tied to his investigation into the 2020 election. And in April, it was recommended he pleaded no contest to 10 counts of misconduct. It was recommended that he lose his license for 3 years. And then today, a referee report came out, essentially looking into that recommendation and finding whether there was cause. That referee did find that there was cause. This lawyer said, based upon the no contest plea by Gableman and his stipulation that all the allegations of the complaint provide an adequate factual basis in the record for a determination of violations of the ethical code for Supreme Court justices and for lawyers, as alleged in the 10 counts of the complaint, I found an adequate factual basis in the record for all 10 counts of the complaint. Some of those counts include demeaning lawyers, demeaning judges, lying about whether he could subpoena the mayors of Madison and Green Bay, not complying with open records laws, like really significant allegations. And so today, this referee said, yes, the 3-year suspension is a good idea. And now it goes to the Supreme Court to decide what's final.
And the justices aren't bound by this recommendation. So the good news for Gableman was he reached a deal basically with the Office of Lawyer Regulation to do 3-year suspension. The referee says, yeah, that's justified. But now the 7 justices, maybe 7, will decide that's appropriate. So remember, Brian Hagedorn clerked for Michael Gableman. Can he hear this case? Rebecca Bradley, an executive served with Gableman, was on the court. Can they hear this case? So that's question number 1. Number 2, will the court want to send a message about Gableman and what he did and go beyond 3 years? There are those who are calling for the revocation of his license, which is very rare, by the way. And usually lots of bad things happen before your license is revoked. Gableman has no history with OLR, Office of Regulation for Discipline. There was, however, a complaint filed against him from the 2008 race. He ran an ad against then-Justice Lewis Butler that some considered to be false, well, many considered to be false or at least implied false things. That deadlocked the court. But other than that, there's been no discipline for him as a lawyer. So first-time offender, revocation is not common. But a progressive law firm, Madison Today, issued a statement saying we want his license revoked. So will the justices do that? That's the big question kind of going forward.
And kind of two important things to note. One of the quotes from the referee's report is about how public in nature these aspects of misconduct were. So his misconduct was very public in nature and involved many members of the public and employees of several municipalities. And so are they going to want to send some kind of message to that end? And then two, Gableman does not seem to have a whole lot of friends at the moment. And so, you know, Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, who hired him to conduct that investigation, has called at this point numerous times for him to be disbarred. And so he doesn't have, I think, a whole lot of support kind of on either end of the spectrum. If you have Love Forward and the Assembly Speaker kind of speaking out against you, that's unusual bedfellows, let's say. So the other kind of really big news and kind of surprising this week is that Planned Parenthood paused abortion care. And this is not to do with law about abortion. This has to do with Medicaid funding. So what was that determination? We already, Medicaid doesn't cover abortion care. Mm-hmm. So what exactly is going on here?
The One Big Beautiful Bill Act now includes a provision that if you do provide abortion service, there's like a 1 year pause in federal funding for you. Now, when it was put together, people went, that's Planned Parenthood. It's pretty obvious we're trying to target them. And so it was passed. Planned Parenthood and others filed a lawsuit trying to prevent this from taking effect. There was an injunction. An appeals court, I think in Massachusetts or out east somewhere last week, lifted the injunction, allowed to go forward. So they announced, we're going to pause services while we figure out what this means, like what our options are. Now remember, Planned Parenthood has three clinics in Wisconsin do abortions, Madison, Milwaukee, Sheboygan. Sheboygan only medical abortions. There are two other non-Planned Parenthood clinics provide abortions in Wisconsin, both in Milwaukee. But Planned Parenthood's worried because they do other things. They provide all these other services. If they lose Medicaid funding, which is supposed to just cover those services, they would have a hard time serving clients. So what's this going to mean for them? The second thing about this is, don't forget the Trump administration under RFK Jr. is undertaking and now a review of abortion medications. Mifepristone, sorry if I said that incorrectly, but Kennedy just told 22 Republican attorneys general this week in a letter that we are going to review the safety of this drug. Now, people point out it's been studied before. It's proven to be safe and effective. Others have said there are questions about that. This could be one more blow for abortion access because I believe two-thirds of abortions performed in this country are done through medication. So this is a kind of a tense moment in time for access to abortion in Wisconsin, which anti-abortion folks are hailing. Like, this is great. They're really happy to see this happen because they say, you should not have taxpayer money even indirectly support abortion any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so it is also interesting that at the one hand where you have politicians trying to thread that needle where abortion is generally a popular sort of medical option for the majority of Wisconsinites support some form mm-hmm. of abortion, and so you watch these lawmakers kind of try to thread that needle, and here is a different avenue for kind of targeting that. Moving to, I would say, like the normal news of the week, after all of that, we went to a kind of strange press conference in the Capitol earlier this week. What looked like it might have been bipartisan elections legislation. It was a Republican and a Democrat hosting this press conference. And then they kind of got up, they stood next to each other, and they said a lot of nice things about each other and how much they respect each other. And then they unveiled competing elections proposals and said that they would not endorse one another's proposals. So what did you make of that whole thing?
This is a conversation that's going to go nowhere. Now, Scott Krug, who's a Republican from Rome, he said he is open to several ideas that Democrats have, but not the big ones. Democrats said, we're not endorsing any of your bills. Like, this is the crux. Most people in Capitol want to do Monday processing, which is you allow local clerks the day before election to open absentee ballots, take them out of the envelope, process them, make sure everything's good and go. You don't count them, however. This bill passed the Assembly in a voice vote last session. The Senate would take it up. In talking to Senate Republicans, I heard from several that, like, look, when they go back to their county GOP events and local activists, they get hit with, like, this allegation of, oh, the clerk in Milwaukee is going to look at those ballots on that Monday and go, we're short X votes in this ward, and you, local Dem party, you need to go get on your horse and get out there in this place and pick up votes. Now, that can't happen under the bill, but that's the fear. That's the allegation. So they're like, we don't want anything to do with it. So Krug is trying to figure out a way, how can I get Monday processing done? Well, that means I load it up with these other provisions about absentee ballot drop boxes and witness signatures on absentee ballot envelopes to get Senate Republicans open to it. Well, if you get Senate Republicans open to it, you lose Democrats and Governor Evers. So this is not going anywhere as it's currently crafted. Now, miracles do happen in the Capitol. But I have a hard time seeing how a miracle happens here when they're not on board with each other and like what they're proposing.
Right. Out of, I think, 16 or 17 bills that were proposed, two of them had bipartisan sign on, and they were about sort of nonpartisan voter education for high school students. So that's the kind of maybe more anodyne stuff that can get through. Anything that really refers to any of those kinds of conspiracy theories that came out of the 2020 election are much harder to get through because, as you say, people have to return to their bases who still believe some of these claims about late night voting dumps in Milwaukee and that kind of thing.
The Dem package has ranked choice voting for local races. That is like a no-no for Republicans. Dave Maxey, who's a chair of the Campaign Elections Committee in the Assembly, emailed me and said, this is basically crazy. like this issue is dead on arrival. Like, what are they doing? We're not doing this.
Yeah, Republicans actually tried to pass a constitutional amendment saying never ranked choice voting, so that'll never get through. And then we also have this week report cards came out from DPI, kind of looking into the state of education of where the state of Wisconsin. Just under half of students are meeting or exceeding expectations in English and math, a slight gain from last year, but huge racial gaps between white students and Black, Indigenous, and Hispanic students.
Been here for 25 and a half years. Every report card I've read has talked about the racial gap in Wisconsin. It has not closed one iota, as I can tell, in 25 years. That's not a great sign.
Yeah, and Jill Underley, the DPI secretary, you know, sort of came out and said, well, we need context, and there's kind of other stuff going on, that it's not just kind of a schools issue. And this has been a Democratic talking point as well, that things like free school lunches and more holistic approaches to education will help. And Republicans are saying we need other accountability measures, you know, bring back certain standards and testing. And so this becomes kind of a forever, again, political talking point.
Yeah, go figure.
Go figure. Here in Wisconsin, who could say? That brings us to the stock report, and rising this week is redistricting. Again, a little bit of news out of the courts in that case.
So remember, we've got two lawsuits pending with the courts in Wisconsin seeking new maps, congressional maps. They're asking for a three-judge panel, which is a never fully used option, to challenge the maps. These requests were filed in the summer, in July, I believe it was. The court just now is saying we're going to take briefs on whether we should, whether this whole scenario fits the law. So the law says if you have a challenge to a congressional district, or I think allegedly one too, then you petition a circuit court. That circuit court tells the Supreme Court we got a challenge. The Supreme Court must appoint a three-judge panel, and then that panel evaluates the filing. What's different here, though, is this is not a map drawn by lawmakers, a map picked by the court. So there's a question of, does this map fit that statute was written in 2011 by Republicans during the last time they had the full levers of redistricting in Wisconsin? So, okay, one lawsuit says it's a partisan gerrymander, the congressional delegation, which is 6-2 Republican right now. One says it's an anti-competitive gerrymander. Basically, one seat is competitive. The rest of them are basically every year a walk for the incumbent. So if you're thinking it's going to be a new map in Wisconsin soon, don't hold your breath. One, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. This is briefing, 3-week process to get these arguments in there. Annette Ziegler, a conservative court, in her concurring opinion to the order said, okay, they should at least have to say why we should do this when we've heard 3 requests in the last couple of years to redraw the maps and rebuffed all of them. Why now? And Justice Bradley, another conservative, said, Rebecca Bradley, we should dismiss this outright. We shouldn't be entertaining this because you can't have 3 judges, circuit court judges, an inferior tribunal, if you will, legal speak, decide or rule about a Supreme Court decision. That doesn't happen in Wisconsin. So what's the path forward here? Well, looks like we might get a 3-judge panel. Will that panel be instructed by the court, hey, we have to appoint you because the law says we do, but here are your instructions to dismiss this case. Will they tell the court or the panel, you're going to have a panel, but and go for it, you know, decide, is this a legitimate challenge, these maps? Or the court say, no, we're not doing this. Even if you have a panel appointed and they say these maps are problematic, the Elections Commission has said over and over again, we need maps by the end of March because the filing deadline is June 1st. You take out papers in April. We have to have time to implement the lines so people know where they're going to run. It's a lot to say, so I need a deep breath, but it's a high hurdle to cross for a new map in 2026. We might get in the redistricting wars going on in this country right now, but not in time for 26, most likely.
And, you know, we haven't spoken in a couple of weeks about legislative races, in part because there are just so many of them, but there are a handful that are going to be really competitive. So tell me about Jessica Seawright.
So she's announcing for the 21st Assembly District. And why I want to talk about her this week is that, you know, I don't know her very well, what her strengths are as a candidate, but her seat is very important. It is 54-45 in the Assembly right now for Republicans. There are several seats that Republicans won in 2024 that Kamala Harris won. One of them is the 21st. Jesse Rodriguez, Republican, around for a while on the Joint Finance Committee, often outruns the top of the ticket. If you want a prayer of 50 seats of Democrats in the Assembly, you must meet Jesse Rodriguez and Todd Novak and Dean Coffert. All three have seats that are kind of like decently Dem-leaning, yet they did fairly well in them. Now, Dean eked out like a 800-vote victory in 2024. That's going to be probably the toughest one. But beyond that, you've got to sweep seats like Ben Franklin, new lawmaker up in Green Bay. to get to 50. Oh, and you've got to defend Ryan Spahn up in Green Bay, who won an open seat, and Steve Doyle out in Onalaska, who won a seat that Trump took more votes than Harris in. So it's not going to be easy. What's the environment look like next year? What resources are going to be like? Quality of candidates, all these things. But here's this is a key race. If you can't beat Jesse, you're not getting to 50 seats. And that's what kind of got to think about for Democrats. This is the map to get there.
And then falling this week, this was the case even before this morning, is Bill Berrien.
So the big question is, how did you not see this coming? So now campaigns, they give you inside the nitty-gritty, they will do opposite research on themselves. They hire a firm that's like, all right, I want you to turn my life inside out. Any bad checks, any bad investments, you know, anything dirty in my, I use dirty as a very loose term here, in my background that could be a problem in a campaign, like it'd be an ad. They either missed something or ignored something or went, this isn't going to be a problem. And that is a major mistake, because how you thought this was not going to be a problem is beyond people I've talked to. Now, look, I love what we do as journalists. I think it's very powerful. The reality, though, is I don't care how many stories we write. Less than a campaign ad, it doesn't break through for people. If Berrien really wanted to fight this, there's a path to survive a bad story. We're also like in September of 25, primaries in August of 26. He's on rough territory to start with. Remember, he rolled out his campaign this summer. Talk radio, conservative talk radio, was like, we're not big fans. He made this cardinal sin of criticizing Donald Trump at one point in 2024. He backed Nikki Haley originally in the primary in 2024. He backed ranked choice voting. That's, you know, things you don't do as a Republican. So talk radio really had a very negative reaction to him as a candidate. Okay, you can survive that too. But you add that plus this, and now Tom Tiffany is in. There was no path for him to nomination. You'd be lighting money on fire, people told me, if you stayed in the race. So now he's out. Okay, now what? Tiffany's your front runner. For Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive, this is like his best case scenario in some ways, because now it's a one-on-one shot with Tom Tiffany. If you're not a Tiffany fan, Josh Shulman's your guy. And there was another 26-year-old medical technician in the race, not to diminish his chances, but not well-known. So let's focus on Josh and Tom for a little bit. For Shulman, it's your best shot, one-on-one. But can you raise the money you need to be a viable alternative to Tom Tiffany? That's going to be tough, because Tiffany is now going to try and bank all these chips. He's got that fundraiser talked about. Glenn Grothman and Scott Fitzgerald are going to be there, special guests. Tony Weed, the congressman from Green Bay area, endorsed his campaign. You can see where the Republican infrastructure is going to coalesce around Tom Tiffany. There are still some donors, though, who aren't like big fans. They're looking at the abortion stuff and other things going, is there a better option? That's why we've talked about, there's an Eric Hovde, a Matt Newman, who they haven't closed the door in a race yet, but they're not probably going to get in. There are people who are like, I want an alternative. What is that alternative to Tom Tiffany? Right now, it's not looking like a very strong one. Maybe Josh takes off, maybe not. But that's why you add it all up. The missteps for Berrien, the cardinal sins he committed, and now this, that his campaign had no viable option to keep going beyond now.
And in his statement, he did say that the campaign funds that he has raised will be going back into the Republican Party. He said, like, you know, we all share this common goal of defeating Democrats. And he did have this kind of more national Rolodex. His first really big donation was from the Winklevoss twins. And so who knows whether, again, having that kind of access to, for example, New York City money would be able to help get whoever does become the eventual Republican nominee over the finish line. So lots to look towards, but I think we all deserve a little bit of a nap after this Friday, and so that'll do it for us at Rewind. I am Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And we'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.